This is a production of Cornell University.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to get started since we've got a very full agenda for today. It is Wednesday, October 19th, meeting of the Employee Assembly. We have one late addition to the agenda that I know of. We have a guest, Anne Marie Morse, who will be talking with us about a transportation issue. Are there any other additions to the agenda for today? Okay, we'll move right in. First piece of business of the day is an update on the means restriction. And I know you're not Gilbert.
I'm sure Gilbert would like to be here, but he's actually having a root canal right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think he'd rather be here.
Yeah, he would rather be here. So it was my understanding at the last meeting, Gilbert presented some designs. And back then, actually, some of the schemes had bar systems and some had net systems. And, since then, we've actually made, several refinements. We've kind of standardized to net systems on six of the bridges, and the suspension bridge we're still wrapping in the mesh fabric. So I'll go ahead and show you some of these designs. And the great thing about it is now, some of the concerns earlier were about the visual obstruction of the bar system on the bridges, and, which was a very, big issue for a lot of people in the community. And now that the nets are down below, deck level, you really will be preserving those views. So I'll let Tim talk a little bit about the wheel diagram here.
So just to reorient you to where lanes restriction fits into this overall mental health framework that Linda is now going to present. I know at least if you back, but those of you back here can't read what those words say. I'm just curious, how many of you have seen this diagram before, this schematic? Yeah. So most of you are familiar with this. So essentially, just to kind of summarize, means restriction is one part of a comprehensive approach to mental health and suicide prevention in particular. So all of the strategies that we have in place to cultivate a healthy educational environment and promote life skills, identify students and other individuals in need of support, and providing those services. These are all part of our approach, including expanded services that we have in counseling and psychological services, and increased efforts educate students, staff, and faculty for a notice and respond program about how to recognize people in need of care. So this is just to remind people of the overall context in which the means restriction project fits. So we'll let Andrew pick it back up at this point.
Sure. Now, between Gilbert's presentation a while back of the designs, some with bars and some with nets, we spent time with our architects for the project, reviewing the designs, and we also took a site visit to Switzerland, and they have five locations where they have these net systems installed. So we visited Switzerland, also met with psychologists to talk about. We were pioneers in setting up these nets, and there were a lot of lessons learned from this trip. I mean, one thing is Switzerland is a beautiful country. Like our town is, it's also beautiful. We got these beautiful gorges, so they both have beautiful settings that these net systems are in. And the net systems we saw in Switzerland were minimally visible. You really couldn't see them. They're only when you looked over the edge of the rail you could see them. And I'll show you some photos of some of those bridges. We also, after talking with representatives, city representatives, and people who dealt with facilities of these bridges. Generally, they're very low maintenance. These are very robust systems. They'll last a very long time. So it was quite good to see that. Also, with Switzerland, and they really had pretty much no issues with debris accumulating in their nets and their sites. There were no effects on birds. We talked to them about that issue, and it really didn't have an effect on wildlife. And generally, it was good to see that these were very well accepted by the communities that these net systems were in place, and that in one case in Munster Terrace, the community is very happy. The nets have been very effective. In fact, at the site, which was I think averaging about 1 to 2 suicides per year, at the Munster Terrace, there haven't been any incidents, any attempted suicides. And actually, that net system was installed in 1999, mm-hmm. and in fact, there hasn't been anybody in the net, whether it was through pranks or through suicide attempts. So we know that there at that location, it stops those suicides. And there are two other bridge sites nearby, you know, within, you know, a couple miles, very high bridges that they are now putting net systems on. They're planning to put this means restriction in. So it's a good sign that it's working. So these additional installations are planned. And then also, you know, a technical issue was, you know, the rescue equipment and techniques, and they use many of the same techniques that our fire department uses. It's all about using ropes to get down into the nets and make rescues or retrieve debris. So this is a beautiful bridge in Switzerland, and you can see here the view from the side. You know, these are the struts that extend out, and from this distance, you really can't even see the nets. Here is Munster Terrace, the one I mentioned to you, beautiful historic site, and they on the edge, there was actually a community down below. These are all apartment buildings, so it was really a huge issue that these suicides were happening in front of families, and so these maps have really stopped that. And here's a view looking up above that net system. Here's a close-up just to show you, you know, what they are. It's really just a steel pole with this cable mesh net, which is over here, just these big mesh panels that are attached to it. And then, you know, here's an image of the fire department simulating a rescue. And the bridge in the distance, that's actually the bridge that they're planning on putting these net systems on in the future. So now I'll go ahead and just present to you each design bridge by bridge. And just to get you a frame of reference, this is Fall Creek here. There are four bridges along Fall Creek, and then there's three bridges we're putting means restriction on along Cascadilla. The Cornell, you know, four of the bridges are Cornell bridges, the Suspension Bridge, the BB Dam Bridge, Trolley Bridge, and the Stone Arch Bridge, which is in Collegetown, are all Cornell University-owned bridges. And then the city bridges tend to be the kind of large traffic and pedestrian bridges, the truss bridges and arch truss bridges on Thurston Ave, Stewart Ave, and Stewart Ave Fall Creek and Cascadilla. So I'll start with the Thurston Ave Bridge. So this is a diagram, and actually in this diagram, the nets are much more transparent than what you see here. This is just an illustrative way to show the net. But you can see the struts extending from the outside. In previous designs, we also had fencing along the abutments to protect the abutments and access down there. We've actually been working with Tim and taking a look at the sites with our consultants. We've determined that we actually can avoid a lot of that fencing and leave the Cornell Plantations fencing, which is already there, in place, and then focus on closing up the bottom of the abutments, which pose some dangerous platforms. And so we're able to kind of close up those kind of areas and be very strategic about how we do this, and really with the intent of avoiding blocking any views and obstructing any views from the bridge deck level. So here's a before view. And Thurston Ave Bridge, and this is with the struts added, and you can see that you can barely see them, they're right along here. The mesh, in our case, you saw the mesh in Switzerland was a stainless steel mesh. Our mesh will be painted black, and then the struts will be painted green to match the bridge, so they should pretty much kind of disappear from the distance in there. Here's a view of the Stewart Ave Bridge over Cascadilla. Again, this is a city bridge, and you can see the net system running along there. And then some strategic locations for abutment protection, you know, existing fences that are already there. And here's the before image, and there's the after image with the struts in place. Any questions so far? I'll just go right to these. This is the Fall Creek Stewart Ave Bridge. This is a large box truss bridge. Here you can again see the net system, you know, on both sides. Fencing along the perimeters at the abutments that already in a lot of cases exist. And here's the before, and then here's the after with the struts. They're generally about 15 feet below the guardrail. So before and after. So you can see really minimal visual impact. And here's a view, you know, this isn't a spectacular bridge. And the view out west over the city is great. And this is, you know, this is what you'd see. You just, you know, the nets are down below, it really wouldn't obstruct the view. So now I'll go ahead with the Cornell bridges. The suspension bridge, you know, this bridge actually, you know, it's a suspension bridge. It's kind of near its design load, so we really didn't have an opportunity to add a lot of weight to it. But one thing that we did that I think is going to be really nice is we removed the existing maize restriction that was put in, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago. So that took off a lot of weight. And then we're wrapping it in this kind of finer gauge mesh fabric. And then the existing fencing that runs along either side of the gorge and up to the suspension towers is going to be left in place. And that's the kind of existing Cornell Plantation fencing. There's a view of the bridge from down in the gorge, and then there's a view with this mesh wrapping around it. And what you'll essentially see, and here, you know, this is the existing bridge. This is the existing maize restriction bar system that's in place. And then here is with that bar system removed and the new mesh fabric wrapping around the bridge. And it comes, you know, it kind of fully encloses it at the center of the bridge where, you know, it's a little more dangerous because people can grab up on the cables and jump over. So that kind of protects that area. And then it opens up as you get towards the bridge suspension towers. But I think it's really amazing. Like, to remove those bars, and again, like, this was the original design of that bridge before those bars were put in, to have this open truss. So you'll be able to look right down into the gorge. So
it has like a canopy?
Yeah, it has a canopy. So there's a central suspension cable that runs from tower to tower.
Okay.
And for part of that, and you can see it here. So right about here, you know, probably about third way down the span on either side, it starts to open up that view towards the sky.
Andrew, is it the same mesh that you're using on the underneath that you'll be using on this part?
Yeah, that's a good question. It actually is a much different mesh. This is the typical kind of vertical mesh gauge. It's a 2 millimeter mesh. It's very thin cable, and it's a much tighter pattern. What you saw before with the net is very robust, very thick cable, and about an 8-inch pattern, because that has to take a lot of weight. But here the idea is really, let's keep it as transparent as possible. And it's also black, so it's like a black screen, you know, in a window. It really tends to disappear more and doesn't catch the light and glare. So this is the BB Dam Bridge. And another part of our strategies was, you know, originally we've been trying to protect the full length of bridges. We start to look more, you know, with Tim and our consultants at, you know, what are really the lethal areas. And we were able to kind of reduce the lengths of the net systems. And, you know, in the case here, we have four panels. And again, you know, kind of protecting underneath the bridge. There's also a fence that runs along here now. I think it's like an 8-foot black chain link fence. And the view from here looking out is quite spectacular. So we're actually going to remove that fence and bring a mesh fence down along the edge of the gorge. And that's actually down lower, and that's where the old hydraulics lab was. So now that's set down. Now you've got a great, you know, vista out towards the gorge from that site. So here's a before, and what I'm talking about is really here. Like, there's a fence right there now, and now it'll be moved down to here, and it'll be able to look right over it. So here's a view of the fences there, and of that net system attached to the underside of that beam. Any questions about this? And then the next bridge is the trolley bridge in Collegetown. And again, this bridge, you know, because of the slope of the terrain on either side of the bridge, of the abutments, you know, the lethal zone is right around the center here. So this bridge only requires two panels that are attached. You see the before and after. And here's a before. You can see the temporary fencing that's right there, and that's without the fencing you wouldn't see anything. So the next one, actually, this is the last bridge, the Collegetown Stone Arch Bridge, which is a beautiful iconic bridge. You know, here in this case, it's a different structure. You know, we really had to be very sensitive in how we deal with this. So here we're using a kind of fly net approach, which is one large panel. We have two attachment points, one on either side of the gorge. And then we attach to certain, you know, strategic locations along the edge of the stone face of the arch bridge. And, you know, so they're on both sides. And so here's a before and after view. And the nature of this bridge also has, you know, when you walk over, there's very thick stone rail that's about, you know, probably about waist height, a little higher. And you really, you know, you really can't, it's so deep that you can't even barely look over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the view is being preserved here. All the temporary fencing that's in place now would be removed, and just still a minimal amount of very low plantation fencing would be located there. So that's really it as far as...
And all that's been approved, that's the goal?
Well, right now, actually, we're involved in the approvals process. We're going in front of the planning board, and we've had several meetings with them. In November, we'll be going in front of them, and also Common Council needs to agree to allow us to put the nets on their bridges.
Yeah, I want to explain a little bit more about that. And by the way, I just want to reintroduce myself. I'm Tim Marshall. I'm Director of Mental Health Initiatives over at Gannett. And, Andrew and I and a group of people have been working on this, both from the design perspective and in reality a political perspective, because in order for us to have permission to put make these changes to university-owned bridges, we just need planning board approval, but the city council, common council, has to approve for the three university or city-owned bridges, and that support has been very ambiguous. There's only been a few members who have expressed support. We need 6 out of 10 members to vote in support of that, and it's not clear that we have that support. There are a few individuals who have expressed strong reservations, and so we're hoping to bring this before them for a vote by December, but because of all the other steps that we have to go through, this may extend into January, which means 5 of the Common Council members will be brand new. And then we're going to be starting over with educating them about this and trying to gain support. So we very much appreciate the past support of this group and all individuals who are in support of this, and we're just letting people know that the Common Council is listening to constituents. So they're paying attention to emails that come in and any other opinions that are expressed. So this is on far from a foregone conclusion that this is going to be approved. So we're still in the thick of that.
Nice job.
I have two questions.
Sure.
Is there, when you were in Switzerland, because it's already implemented, were there instances that you had heard about for thrill seekers jumping into them just for fun?
No, actually, they haven't had that situation. They actually had a situation on Munster Terrace where someone pointed and their dog jumped into the net. So the dog was rescued. There were good lessons learned. There was one bridge site where, in a rush to protect it, some really just awful incidents had happened there. And it was it's a very narrow gorge. It's only 60 feet, but it goes down 500 feet. You can't even see the bottom. And it's a little wooden covered bridge, and they quickly put a mesh at ground level across it, and that's where they had situations where actually the local, you know, teenagers might like ride a bike across it or something like that, and that's why they're set 15 feet below, so that it's not, you don't want to make it easy for someone to end up in there. If you're going to end up in a net, it's going to be probably painful. You'll be okay, but you know, we definitely don't want that type of mischief to happen. And also, I didn't talk about it in the previous designs, but you can see there were end panels on some of the mesh, panels, and that's really to prevent people from the side getting onto the mesh.
Well, and that sort of leads into my second question is, how do you keep people from jumping into it and then climbing up to the edge and then going outside?
Yeah, that's
because if somebody's going to kill themselves and are determined they're going to do it, and what is the stop thing from just jumping into it, even if they're injured, as long as they're conscious, if they're determined, they'll just climb up to the edge and jump off the edge.
Yeah, we definitely consider that. And Tim might be able to speak more about this, but based on interviews of people who have actually made suicide attempts off bridges off the Golden Gate, for instance, the second they jump is the second they determine that they've just made the worst decision in their life often. And so we're hoping that will have that deterrent effect. Now, there may be a chance that someone is so extremely determined that they may do that. we can't guarantee that that won't happen, but our sense is that it will stop. It should stop the majority.
Just a couple of things. So this is a really important issue that we thought a lot about. One thing is that physically, when you jump into this thing, it's hard. There's a certain envelopment that occurs, that it's not an easy thing to get out of. But is it physically possible? For if you're really determined, yeah, that is a possibility. But one of the things that they learned in Switzerland was no one has jumped into these nets, and no one has jumped off the unprotected areas adjacent to the Munster Terrace, where there actually is a shear drop. So they think there's some psychological benefit to the presence of these things that has contributed to a lack of people jumping in at all, or even from the exposed areas.
And I have a follow-up question to your common council comment. If they don't approve it, will we move ahead with our four bridges?
That is our plan, is to move ahead with ours.
And are we going to wait until that decision before we start installing ours?
I don't think we've made a specific decision about when we would move forward, but the reality is that for every bridge that's not approved, the temporary barriers will have to come down immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would have is, we would probably have time. We could probably leave our temporary barriers up until we were ready to make the changes on those particular bridges. It wouldn't have to happen all at once, mm-hmm. But the barriers on the city-owned bridges would have to come down.
So that kind of leads to my next question. If everything goes well and you get all your approvals, why do you want to have all these installed then?
Andrew, could you address that? I would say by the end of next summer.
By the end of the spring semester?
Well, you know, there's seven bridges. We don't want to disrupt traffic on all seven simultaneously, so we would have
done.
Days. but that said, the vehicular impact would be very minimal, because we wouldn't completely close down a bridge. It would just be one lane, and it would only be during the daytime. Because there's really not a lot to these nets. It's really disrupt. So it would come prefabricated. It'd probably take 6 weeks, all said and done. And lane closings might only be for 2 weeks at a time. So yeah, it won't be bad, but we have to be mindful of that. We don't want to disrupt the patterns. And
would it be possible to do maybe some of the worst bridges by the end of spring semester? Like quarterfinals and all that?
Yeah, no, I think that would be a smart approach. Thurston, we could look at the ones that are, have the highest percentages.
But Tim, what kind of feedback are you and your colleagues getting at Gannett regarding just mental health things in general? Have there been any quiet suicides that we haven't heard about? And has the census been a deterrent? Because off of Bill's question, I think that's one thing that I picked up on, is that people say if people are going to kill themselves, they're going to do it anyways, and it's not true, right?
Well, what I would say two things. One is that since the fences went up, we have not had any suicides by enrolled students. But you really have to look at data over time to have a good sense of your preventive effect, because some years we have zero, and some years you have two, and some years you have a cluster, mm-hmm. like we did. So that's part of it. The other thing is that these deterrents, these nets, will primarily have a preventive effect for suicidal individuals who are ambivalent, or there's some element of impulsivity that may be involved in the decision. There will always be some individuals who are highly determined to kill themselves, and they will, even if you employ means restrictions. So this is not going to be a 100% guarantee. There's always some level of displacement when you do means restriction, but overall you find a preventive effect.
So just to add to that, somebody asked the question, is it a deterrent? The police have had incidents where, because of the fence, someone was able to get to somebody before they would, otherwise they would have gone straight over.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fence has allowed friends to pull back someone, and has allowed law enforcement to come in and intervene. So they have been effective.
Well, besides this background you gave us, is there anything that you folks would like to see the employee assembly do?
any mechanism that you have for either expressing support for this effort or cultivating support among other community members would be useful.
I just want to say I think it's awesome that you guys went to Switzerland. There was a lot of initiative and concern and genuine, you know.
Yeah. And they asked someone from the city to go along, but they couldn't go, right?
Yeah.
Or from
yeah.
the city staff.
Oh, Rave asked the mayor.
Yeah. Right, come yeah. along, get educated.
I think yeah. about yeah. Cornell and our efforts to mm-hmm. really create samples.
Tim, is there a sense that the people in the city aren't supportive, or just the people on the common council don't feel supportive? Has there been any survey or anything?
There's not a survey. When you look at general surveys about this kind of topic, you often find that people have there's sort of a conventional wisdom that things like this don't work, and so it's not uncommon to find individuals who are skeptical of this type of approach. But when you educate people about it and people learn about it, generally what we find is that people are supportive. And there was a public hearing last summer where the mayor and common council invited the public to come out. We encouraged people to come out. There is an opposition group called Ithaca Is Fences, which tried to get their supporters to come out. Over 40 people spoke in favor, in support of this, and about 5 people spoke in opposition. And a common council member said that the emails that they're getting are, the numbers far support this initiative compared to the ones that are opposing it. So one thing I wanted to mention is that there were concerns at that point that this should be cost neutral to the city, that because of the city's situation financially that they couldn't afford this, and the university has committed to making this cost neutral in terms of installation, repair, maintenance, liability insurance. And so we really tried to address the aesthetic concerns that we took very seriously about not wanting to obscure the vistas, which are so important to all of us, but also addressing these financial concerns as well. There are still some people that just don't want to support this for whatever reason, and that seems to be having an impact on some common council members.
Yeah, and are these drawings available for people to see?
Mm-hmm. They're on the web
online. If you just search means restriction Cornell, you'll come to the website.
Okay. Well, we're about out of time. Does anybody have any last questions? I'm assuming if people have follow-up, we could certainly email you guys,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. And can you let us know what happens with Common Council? Are you
definitely.
Set the date?
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Mary?
Hey, when did you get back?
It's like a long time. I'm not feel quite back yet, but the end of September, technically.
Welcome back. Thanks. Is it any more hectic here or at home?
The home is a more known quantity. Here, it's all different.
You just
so.
Never know.
Yeah.
So I have your questions and I have not.
Yep.
So the employee engagement survey, I actually haven't seen the survey, so I don't have any thoughts on it.
Well, to let you know, we've seen the survey and think it's really great, and we had a couple suggestions, and they were very open to kind of tweaking some of the concerns that we had.
Great. In terms of what happened with the, and you probably know this, so I'm sending a letter out tomorrow to the DDD, letting them know people have time during the workday to complete it if they want to, and I'm telling them that it's coming, and then the survey will open the following week. In terms of how I see it being shared with the EA and the staff as a whole, we talked to Marin about this, as well as what will go to executives mm-hmm. and leaders, because there is, as you can well imagine, there is a reasonable tension between how much you share and whether that will have an impact on what people say. On the other hand, if you don't share enough or you group it in too big a category, people have no idea. Was that said about my unit? am I the norm? Am I off the norm? You know. So what we've agreed to is that the data will be made available by college and vice presidential units. That's big enough so that individuals can identify, assuming at least five people in that unit answer. So if we get a low rate in a small place, it won't come down any farther. But and then in terms of the overall outcomes, we'll look to IRP to develop their report like they did with the faculty one. And I would assume that you will see what I will see. In terms of follow-up, it's hard to know because it depends on what the survey says. The survey says, you know, we wish we only, you know, didn't have to work on Mondays. Then, you know, we can say, we heard you, and that's probably not going to happen.
You could have just called it vacation day, right?
You know, on the other hand, if there are things in the survey that are actionable that come out, then I think those are the follow-up items. And what we just need to wait to see is how many things are said across enough of the university that you can take a university approach to it, and how many of them are, you know, different based on college and unit. And so you really have to hold those leaders accountable for addressing them, and it will be hard to know until we get to data. The questions, as you saw, are a mix of whether or not it's about your where you work versus the university. So
yeah, I think the most important thing is for us, at least I'm going to speak for us, jump in if I'm wrong, but that the people who fill out the survey have some sort of feedback from it to say, you know, yeah, maybe we can't do something about this, but these are the things we can do something about, so they don't feel like they filled it out.
Well, or even if you just say no, that's
yeah.
still feedback, right?
Yeah.
I think it depends. I still think you can say that to people, you know, folks feel really strongly about X, and we've looked at that, and we just can't do it. That's still feedback.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't waste your time. But I know that they're focusing them on institutional issues, on your work unit issues, and I think on supervisory relationships. And then a bunch of working conditions.
I guess maybe, Tanya, to take your statement one step farther is to say, I guess it's going to be in the paw print, or like, or some of the results going to be in the paw print, or something like that. You know, what's the action steps after the survey comes out? That's kind of what I'm curious about. How are we going to communicate to the staff the points we can communicate to them?
Right,
Sally.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I would assume that all the communication vehicles will be put into place to communicate what you know, what comes out of it.
Right. So now, is that something that Marin's group does?
Marin is responsible for the development of the data. So they're the ones that will know what the survey results are.
Right.
They wouldn't necessarily be the ones to determine how it was communicated or what was communicated. I would assume that's something that we'll want to talk about together after you see the outcome.
That seems reasonable. We're just kind of curious what those steps would be, and I'm the communications chair, so I was kind of.
Yeah, I think there's probably something to actually start thinking about and what you all think should happen before you get the story. It doesn't, I mean, to some extent, you know, there are going to be some things that you hear that you want to report out, and there might be other things that are just. I still think you want to report out what you heard, but it might not be as easy to figure that out. But knowing that some amount of it needs to be fed back, you might want to be thinking now about ways in which you think that should happen. So there's obviously the written communication, but should there be, you know, listening sessions to follow up? We heard this. What does that mean to you? You know, does this resonate? I think those are reasonable next steps. I mean, the point isn't really the survey.
It's the outcome.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, having done this at Harvard, the sessions you do afterwards are incredibly valuable because folks tend to respond in not always, but in more stark ways because you got it. You know, it's like a multiple choice question. You have to answer it. But when you get a chance to talk to them, that's when they give you the kind of the nuance around what they meant when they gave you that, which is just very important for understanding what to do, or you can inadvertently solve the wrong problem. So as clear as the question seems, you know, people perceive them, take them in based on a whole bunch of stuff you can't know, and then you go back out and tell people again. This is what we heard. Tell us more. Give us more information. You're not going to do that on 55 points. But you may look at it and find five that are really important and that you want to go out and learn more about.
So if we find data, so say there's an area on campus or unit that seems to have some really specific data, could we ask that unit to have their own listening session to delve into that? Or
right,
is that
so I think what we need to probably do, and I haven't really thought about this, is figure out the aspect of this that is EA's responsibility mm-hmm. versus the aspect that State of Sports' right. responsibility. Because I think as it relates to something that's heard in one unit, it's a responsibility yeah. to make sure that there's a follow-up. I think things that are cutting across the university, mm-hmm. there may be something that the EA wants to do or maybe partner with me to do, because those are more institution-wide, and we can figure out what to do with those. Mm-hmm. I do think the EA has a role to play in advising David about ways in which he could consider unit-specific mm-hmm. processes. But I mean, I think when it comes down to it being different over here
right.
and over here, I think that's why he coached
mm-hmm.
okay.
Here, I kind of hate to ask, but I guess I have to. So I'm a little bit curious. I'm just not understanding why, in your role, you wouldn't have looked at the survey or had input in. And
so that's a fair question, and IRP only agreed to do this in the time frame they agreed to do it in if they didn't have to go through consensus building to get the questions. They were very clear in saying with the number of people we have and everything else we have on our plate, we will do it in your time frame, but not if we have to spend untold hours trying to get agreement on whether this should say that or which and whether. So what they showed me were the general areas that they were going, that they got out of focus groups that they were going to prod on. But then they sort of said, look, we're survey experts, you're not, you're just going to have to trust us that we're asking the right questions. I thought it was a fair point.
Well, that helps a lot. That helps me understand.
Yeah.
I think they told us that last year at a meeting, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Tony talked to us and pretty much said
to leave them alone. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, having tried to put the survey together a couple of years ago with a committee, it really is nearly impossible because people have, you start out with a reason why you want to do the survey, right? Or something you're nervous about or something you want to test in. And that like frames how you look at every question. And so I have a tendency because I don't really care much for negativity, so I don't mind having a problem as long as it focuses on the solution. Mm-hmm. So if I read a question and it looks really negative, I can't get that out of my head. Except from survey experts will tell you that sometimes to drive to an answer, you have to write them in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
But I get all stuck on why it's written like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they just said, thank you all very much. You know what you want. You're just going to have to trust us. Or I think we would have had to wait like 6 or 8 more months before they had the time to do it. Seemed reasonable.
Yes.
Plus it's less stressful. I mean, they just have to fret after the outcome.
thank you.
Anything else on the survey? So healthcare costs, yes, you should expect an increase for the next year. They, although better than the national average by far, 6%. And that's a third of the national average of nearing, as well as the double digits. Maybe not a third, but actually, and an increase in the prescription drugs as well. We cannot attenuate the things, these increases. We keep trying, and we did 1 year with nothing, and we knew when we did that, that we would, you know, we took the burden of that cost onto the benefits pool. And so it was a better year than almost all my peers had, but still kind of a tough year for us. So fringe rate is going up again. It's up at 35, it's going to go up again. We just can't, and it's all healthcare. So the whole increase in the pool is healthcare. On the state side, it's much worse. For those of you on the state side, already saw the lowest increase was 11%. The highest was like 50-something percent. They have given themselves the option to raise them again in December. It's just, and that unfortunately is more like the rest of the country than ours are. So, you know, we feel like people are doing everything we've asked them to do. We hope more people will go into the Cornell program for healthy living. That is our long-term attenuation of costs, keep people healthy and keep them out of acute care. So we're continuing to push that plan. We have concerns about Health Now's long-term stability here. The doctors don't like them. We're the only ones who still have them. So there's a lot coming forward. The cost of the healthcare reform is significant for employers. So we took on a big cost when we added up to age 26. We'll take on some more costs as each of the reform aspects come in. And so on top of the actual claim costs that we're paying that are going up, we're now paying for the cost of the reforms, which are pretty significant. So I don't have any, I wish I had better news. I mean, it doesn't seem like good news, but if you look at what everyone else is doing, 6% is actually pretty good.
So Mary, just as an aside from that, because people will probably ask this, but SIP, will there be a SIP program?
I certainly am strongly recommending a healthy SIP. The inflation numbers don't, indicate a good trajectory for us. I mean, it's hard to tell mm-hmm. that's going up and down, but we feel like we need to reward people for all the additional work they're doing. That was nearly impossible with the SIP we had mm-hmm. last year. But I got to tell you, honestly, the budgets are not in balance, and on the state side, we continue to get more cuts. And so I'm faced with this reality that the more you put into SIP, in some cases, the fewer employees you can have. And, you know, I just don't know how much longer we can continue to do that. So we are definitely advancing the proposal for SIP so far, although some of the colleges have told us they don't know where they're going to find the money. Theoretically,
I'm just curious the reasoning. I don't know a lot about it, but the reasoning for increasing the age of the dependent for the healthcare.
That was so in the national healthcare reform, why that was done up to age 26.
Yeah.
That was the largest, that group of individuals, age 21 to 26. Were the largest group of uninsured.
Okay.
And in general, they're not a high cost.
Right.
But they
so
have
was that mandated then?
Yes, it was a mandated change. But it was mandated because what was happening is they had no health insurance and they were using emergency rooms. And there's nothing more expensive than the healthcare system. So for the healthcare system as a whole, it's cheaper. For the employer that has to pick up the additional dependents, it's an increase. So it depends on your worldview, right? If you're looking at the cost of healthcare writ large, it will ultimately make that healthcare cost go down. But if you're insuring the individuals, you have to pick up the additional.
So it actually benefits the insurance company.
It benefits the hospitals and more than the insurance because they weren't insured. So what happens is that everyone who does have an insurance plan, this is the strategy behind it, and this is what Obama said. When I pay my costs, I pay a premium for what's called indigent care. people who don't have any insurance. They the hospitals and healthcare providers, they have to get that money from somewhere, right? They don't do it for free. So they integrate that cost as it's like a surcharge onto the rest of us. So the concept here is that surcharge will ultimately, when everybody is insured, go away. And you'll pick up these costs in a more normalized fashion. And those costs will be less because it'll be preventative based, and so they won't wait until they're really sick and go to this. So in the long-term trajectory, it makes all the sense in the world to me. In the reality of today, it's new costs that we didn't have before. Because you still are paying the indigent care fee, because there's still lots and lots of people that are uninsured. And you're picking up this group. So I don't really know what to say about annual supervisor reviews by their staff. This keeps coming up. If you would like, the best thing I can do, because I'm going to run out of time, is if you have a proposal, why don't you bring it forward to us and specific format? I think that's probably the best way to go forward. You know, many of us have aspects of our performance reviews that have this in it already. In general, I don't find these to be particular. I've told you this is really effective because I think you're putting somebody in a pretty tough spot if they have a bumpy relationship to expect that they're going to give that information to their supervisor in a feedback session. What we do is we collect that information. If you're using the new performance development or the performance review process, you're supposed to get a list of individuals that you, as the boss of the boss, go out and ask for feedback from. And in mine, I include people that report directly to that individual. So that's the way I do it. And I think a number of other people do as well. But if there's a way that, and we also have the 360 as a way to get it. So everybody whose supervisor goes through any of our development programs is getting a 360. But if there's something specific that you'd like to see, I think you should just bring it forward and we'll take a look at it. Rewards and recognition program. Actually, I do have something to report on that. So rewards and recognition, low cost, no cost, and general acknowledgments are now one of our core objectives for the HR group, and Kathy Berkman is one of the people leading that committee.
Yeah, and I was invited to their meeting last week.
That's what, yeah.
So they're doing great stuff.
Yep, and I think we've got some really interesting ideas there. So, including different ways to recognize individuals, and that's particularly a good thing. So, I think they're going to be making proposals. Hopefully, you all will opine on those. And the last one is the New York City Tech Campus. And the question is a great question. Is this an opportunity for Cornell staff? I don't see it as separate from my purview. It's definitely within my purview. I help to raise the workforce part of it. But it's an interesting answer because have you guys had a presentation on the tech campus?
We just did this morning at the leadership breakfast.
Okay. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to have someone come, Kathy Dove or someone, and do a presentation. You might want to look and see what you mean first. The tech campus is, we were given the opportunity along with actually any other university to apply for it. It's coming from Mayor Bloomberg in New York City. So there are strings attached to it. They're giving $100 million, $100 million and the land and the space for the campus. But one of the things attached to it is that we will participate actively in their workforce investment activities and try to bring in people to certain jobs off the unemployment rolls of New York City, specifically New York City. So there are some jobs where we will be expected to look first at anyone that they ask us to look at from their unemployment rolls. But the percentage that we have to hire from there is still a minority of the hires. We just have to consider them. So I do think that there's going to be, as we ramp up, great opportunities in a really exciting campus. I also think that some of the work that's going to be done on that campus will have some excellent and really exciting reaches into this campus. So it's hard because we don't want to get too excited about it in case we don't win. And it is a big, it will be a long-term big fundraising investment if we win it. We have to raise a lot of money for it, which we're pretty sure we can. But it's kind of like really wanting something and not wanting to wish too hard to get it, because then what if you don't, you'll be disappointed. And so I think we just have to wait and see. I mean, we know Stanford is full court press to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched Kathy Dove and the provost and 100 other people actually construct this, and it's amazing. It would be really exciting for you to hear about it, because it's a totally different concept than anything we have on this campus. I mean, it's not another college in the way that we think about them here. There's no departments, it's multidisciplinary, it's focused on key areas of need in the state. And it's just a really fascinating. It's like if you were going to do graduate education and technology transfer all over again, start all over, how might you build it?
What do you think that Cornell? I mean, it seems to me that Cornell's an excellent
fit
for this, given our grant mission and our cooperative.
Exactly.
Our cooperative.
I agree with you. As a matter of fact, the
going through your PR.
we feel actually quite strongly about that. I think the president started on this. He gets all animated about it. You know, we're going to give $100 million of taxpayer money to Stanford. You know, a private university from California.
Right.
Of course, they have just magically affiliated with
Stanford.
Yeah, well, read it closer. It's not really an affiliation, and it's not an affiliation for this campus. It's an affiliation in the money for graduate school. But they're slippery suckers.
As opposed to us.
We're
If you haven't seen it, there's a petition going around that was started by some, I think one of you sent it around. Did the EA send it around?
Beth may have sent it around, or it may have gotten
someone sent it around. I think the EA may have gotten it, but you can click on it, I think it's, I think it'll be exciting. I mean, I actually think it's a pivotal opportunity if Cornell gets it. I think people who come after us will identify Cornell as a different player in New York. So I'm hoping. I think I'm hoping we really get it, and then I'm equally hoping to get Stanford just doesn't.
It's not
us. It just really bugs me that they decided to, you know, come. I mean, we're not going over there. I will say the reason that they're doing so well up until now, at least in the rhetoric, is that the whole concept of this is to diversify the economic infrastructure of New York City through tech development and through entrepreneurial activities, so that they're not so dependent on Wall Street, so that there are other things in New York City that will feed their economic infrastructure. And Stanford has a long history of doing that out in Palo Alto, and that's how come they're getting so much traction. And we haven't done that to the extent because our spinoffs have largely been we give our intellectual property away, a lot of the most creative stuff through our land grant mission. And so it's much harder to prove what we've done in New York State because so much of it is part of the core land grant mission. CTEC this past year funded what, 12 companies, I think. So we know we can. And if you look at some of the things we've done, not just for New York, but for the whole world, through CALS and Human Ecology and IOR, it is a transfer of knowledge that has a great deal of benefit. But okay. Sorry, I'm trying to be about tech campus. Should be ours to say no to.
Well, thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, Ari, did you have a question?
I was just wondering if you wanted to highlight any of the HR streamlining efforts that
we talked about at the, I think probably the one that's going the best is the onboarding center. So we now, when you're hired, you come into one place, you have the same experience no matter where you came from. It saved a lot of time in the college and we're hoping that by the spring, all faculty and academic staff, well, we started with staff, we'll go through it as well. And the consolidation, the cost infrastructure was to move all of HR for central administration into one place. That was the other really big change that we made. We're still working on recruitment, streamlining. It's in play. We've made some agreements, but it's still in play. And then the big one, of course, is Workday. A system replacement that we have planned. We don't have a go-live date for that. What we've promised ourselves is that we're not going to go out onto the campus recruitment system until we're comfortable that it will make things better. And so, thank you. and my steering committee is almost all from the College of Management. So the decision will be made by the steering committee, will be made by the president, but after involvement of the steering committee. And right now, we have three areas that we benchmark to decide whether we're ready. The first is the Workday technology ready? And it's not. It's almost there, but it's not quite there. We knew that when we took it because we were one of the first universities, so we're working with them, but we still have some things they have to do. The second one was, can we tie it back to the Cornell systems and then integrate it and interface with it in the appropriate way? That's still not ready. And the third is the campus ready? And we were in a lot better shape in the spring than we are right now. So with some of the trials and tribulations of Kuala, we feel like the campus is less ready than they were before. And so that would have been the one I think I had the most confidence in. When people see Workday, they say, could I have it tomorrow, please? It makes life so much easier. But now I think people are trying to say, okay, well, not yet. One more thing to learn. Although it's very easy to learn, it is different. So I would say we're moving cautiously. We have no reason to rush. We have people soft. It doesn't do what we need it to do, and it doesn't get data down to the work desktop where we need it to be. But we don't want to hurry and find that we have unintended complexities on the campus that we didn't take the time to understand. So for right now, its actual implementation date is still up in the air. And I think probably will be longer than we had originally hoped. We want to let the people that are working so hard on Kuala go ahead and do that, get that where they hope it will be. We have to get Kronos in part because Kohl's is breaking. It was only actually supposed to last a couple of years, and then we were supposed to throw it away and put in a new system. So the fact that it's been able to loop along as long is great, but that has got to get replaced. And so we have to go over to Kronos, and then I think we can do
So Kronos and Workday will be operating at the same time? They provide different services?
Kronos is just a time collection system.
Okay.
So what that does is it replaces Colt,
right,
where you put your time in. But it will also replace everything else. It will replace the exempt leave tracking, all that stuff will get replaced by Colt. So what will or Kronos. So what will happen is Kronos will run first.
So we're using it in SAS, so I'm familiar
with
it.
You are, and so are a number of other places, but we still have parts of the campus that have two different systems running, or some don't even have Kronos at all. Some don't. They didn't need Kronos in the beginning and they haven't put it in. Others have moved all the way over. So when we built the interface to Workday, we said, you know, we're not going to build something that it doesn't comply with audit standards. It needs to go away. It can't make any more changes to it because it keeps breaking. So we'll come after Kronos. Rather than jamming in Workday, having everybody learn how to put in both, then having to unlearn how to put, you know. So we said, let's do this in a logical sequence. Get everybody over onto the sustainable time collection system, and then we'll go into it.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Guy. You look great, by the way.
Thanks. Well, did I feel? No, I'm tired.
Really? Why? No, why?
A little bit. All right. So if everybody could take a very quick look at the minutes. And entertain a motion to approve when someone's ready.
So moved. Second.
All in favor of the minutes? Great. Thank you. That's quick and easy. All right. Quick report from the chair, because we've got a lot of other things to go over. So we did have an update on the New York Tech campus, which is kind of neat, and I took some notes. Amy thought I was text messaging through the whole meeting, but I was actually taking notes. Maybe. And they're looking at three different hubs, like she said, multidisciplinary, but three different hubs. One on connected media, one on healthier life, and one on building environments. Does that seem right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is primarily a graduate program. It's not going to be an undergraduate program, but they'll see engagement with undergraduate students in terms of internships and the ability to kind of cross-pollinate. They just announced that they're partnering with Technion, an Israeli group, just won the Nobel Peace Prize, I think.
Chemistry.
Well, somebody who...
Nobel. Someone there won. Okay.
University.
I was, multi-noting here. They're with our land grant mission, they're looking at connecting with a high school there so that there'll be a partnership with the campus and a high school, which is kind of neat. This is going to be a completely green campus. They showed a really neat mock-up of what the campus will look like 30 years from now, and it's very high-tech. But the first building that they'll build will create the energy for the building, so it'll all be sustainable. Let's see, what else? The big thing that they're trying to sell with Cornell, that this will give Cornell a global, rural, and urban presence, and Cornell's one of the few places that would have all three of those things. Let's see, Cornell has excellence in all of the areas that we're looking to target there, and a commitment to New York City, which makes us unique. It would be built on Roosevelt Island. There's two parts of the business model. There's the finance component, which they were very clear about saying that they would not be using operating budget or endowment funds from this campus to fund it. They're looking at raising all of the money other than what would be given by New York City. They'd be raising the money, $350 million over the first 10 years to start building, and then they'll continue to, after the first 10 years, they'll subsidize it with debt load and other philanthropy. So there'll be nothing touching this campus for at least the first 10 years. After that, there'll be a combination of Gary's. Are you grinning over there?
No.
Oh.
No.
Let's see. They think this will help achieve diversity goals for people who don't want to come up here, that we'll be able to diversify our campus community in New York City. Short term, they're going to be offering current programs, graduate fields that we have on campus now. After that, they're looking in long term to grow new fields. They're also looking at a commitment to a dual degree program with Technion. So you would essentially get a degree from both universities simultaneously if you wanted to. I think that's kind of the big... Curtis? Curtis? Okay, Curtis. I was going to say, Curtis, have anything to add to yours or two?
Yeah. No, that's...
They will be presenting, I think, at the UA. Did they set a date for that yet? So they're supposed to present at the UA. If we win and we decide we want them to come here and talk to us, we can certainly have them do that. So that's the update on that for the moment. And I can update on rewards and recognition, but I'll maybe do that at the next meeting since we're limited for time. So, Bridget, do you want to talk about committees briefly?
Lavania is chairing Education Committee. Leslie is chairing Communications. You're chairing Staff Recognition and Awards. And Jeannie is chairing Personnel Policy. So we are pretty much all staff in all the committees.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Leslie?
As I was walking up here, I realized I was supposed to be presenting on a couple of things that I had supposed to be on the agenda, and this week ran away from me. So I will try to my best to remember what I wanted to talk about.
You can talk about it next time if you want.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
So at the Faculty Senate meeting, they passed a resolution that I found surprising that needed to be passed. There was a policy in place at the university that faculty could not get a Cornell degree.
Really?
Yes. And the folks who were looking into it tried to figure out where in the world that policy came from, and they think it started at the beginning. That there was concern about cronyism and that kind of stuff, and that, you know, if I hire you for my department, or, you know, I want you to be my friend, so I'll give you a degree. And so they put this rule into place. So they passed a resolution that faculty can get a degree from Cornell under certain stipulations. And the rules are different than the rules for staff. And there was some concern about that. Because one of the requirements, you have to have everybody's approval, you know, everybody in God has to approve it. And the limitation that we as staff don't have is that it has to apply to, it has to benefit Cornell. So if I'm a faculty member and I want to get another degree, like I'm in the law school and I want to get a PhD in English, it has to benefit Cornell for me to do that, whereas it doesn't for if we want to pursue it. So there was some conversation about that. It still passed despite that. We have had, the Faculty Senate has had two conversations about the tech campus in New York City. Kent Fox came a while ago. Yeah, maybe it was at the first meeting. And then President Scorton came to the meeting last week and reinforced the messages that Kent was giving. And there's a lot of enthusiasm about it. There's also a lot of concern, particularly around the fundraising, and whether the fundraising for New York City will take away from the fundraising from Ithaca. And I still haven't heard a good answer to that, because I don't think people know. I don't think that there's a way to predict, but that's... And I believe that there was something else that I wanted to tell you, and it's in my office. Sorry about that. In terms of the United Way, I want to invite everyone to put on their calendars November 12th. There's the first women's hockey game of the season, and it will be a United Way fundraiser. They're hoping to have, like they did last year, a donor who will pay $1 per ticket. That give to the United Way $1 per ticket, so the more people there, the better. There will be four United Way agencies there to share information, do tabling. There'll be a raffle, I think, but not the kind of raffle we did last year. Like, what's a 50-50 raffle? What is that? Mm-hmm. Is that you get 50%
you get half and they get
half. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're talking about doing. Pledge cards are out right now, so you should have received one. Please consider submitting a pledge. And just to let you know, I don't remember whether I said this at the last time I presented or not, this is the 90th anniversary of the United Way this year. And so they've been working in this community for 90 years and doing a lot of really good work. It's pretty cool.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, one last really brief. If you live in another county and you want to donate your money to your county's United Way, you can still do that through our pledge process. You need to designate the county and they will send the money. But it still fulfills Cornell's obligation to whatever the amount that they're trying to raise.
Thank you. Chair Fund, Gemma, do you have any?
We have the 4 o'clock today for the online option. So if you have something, we have that. Before 4 o'clock, 6.
At 3:59, make sure.
Yeah. And thank you for everybody that volunteered for the live auction tomorrow. I sent around your duty list. Appreciate your help. And if you wear your shirt, if you haven't gotten your shirt yet, maybe Amy can give it to you today if you've not down with theirs. But we're set. So far, we've made $4,000.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks like it's pretty active.
Yeah.
It's been great. So, I'm excited.
Yes.
51 items on the live auction list.
Yes.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Peggy's going to have to talk really fast.
She says she can do it.
Okay.
You saved Billy Jill ticket for Lynn.
So the last three items on the old business, I think that we can probably move to our next meeting. I'll just quickly say that right now we have two potential locations confirmed for the president's address. One would be the Short Center, one would be Annabelle Taylor. And the possibility of Milstein, though, that only seats 257. So if anyone else has any other options, please look into if they're available, what the cost would be, and bring that to the next meeting because we will decide at that meeting. All right. So, Anne Marie, do you want to hop in? We've got about 5 minutes.
Sure. I'll try to make this quick. I just wanted to, I talked with Beth McKinney, and she thought it'd be something helpful to bring to the committee and talk about. We're looking for solutions or possible people who might be able to help us with this problem. I've been traveling for many years now, 6-7 years, on TCAT. There's a bus route 52. Goes out down 79, out towards Slaterville, Caroline area, and then across the county line into Tioga County. Goes and hits several towns that are pretty far away. Goes to Richford, Berkshire, and New York Valley. We were informed recently, riders on the bus, that TCAD has decided that they're no longer just running past the county line. They just are dropping the entire service from that point on. A lot of the riders are very upset because I have to tell you, for like 20 years, there was another transport company involved, Tioga Transport. It took us back and forth. We bought tickets, worked out fine. And 2 years ago, TCAT took it over from them, didn't renew the contract, and now is dropping everybody past the county line. So a lot of people are really upset. They feel like, seems like TCAT kind of took it over just to take the lucrative part within the county of the lines that go down 79 into Brooksondale. And it's just basically taking all the riders in Tioga County to the curb. They're saying they have a point, you know, times are tough, they have to make budget cuts. They did meet with us. They said Tioga County does not currently give them any money. Tompkins does, Cornell does, and City, I think it is, does. The question a lot of the riders are saying is, wait a minute, well, a lot of us are Cornell employees, and Cornell is funding some of this. So, we're, you know, it's very upsetting. First of all, you know, you go several years, many years, and you're thinking, well, I have a way to get into work. You might not have a car. You've given up your permit. A lot of different scenarios we have going on, and people are like, how am I going to get to work? Plus, you're starting this in the middle of January, great time of year to suddenly figure out how you're going to get to work when you haven't had to do that in a long time. Another issue, and this is one I've been trying to figure out an answer to and don't have a solution yet, at the county line, there actually is a park and ride, tentatively named, but from November 1st through April 1st, no one's allowed to park there because it is where the plows turn around.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it complicating the matter that people don't have necessarily a bus route anymore, but they can't even park somewhere where they could get a bus route. So it's a really kind of an awkward situation. One of the other things I want to point out is we have met with somebody, we had a meeting in Berkshire that TCAD representatives came to as well as Tioga County representative. And he did say they're looking into trying to get us a couple of routes. Right now we currently have 4 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon, evening, which has been great. There's always people on the schedule, you know, there's different schedules and people have different work schedules. They're telling us they might be able to give us 1 or 2 bus routes in the morning and maybe 1 or 2 in the afternoon. I have to say it's really not, people are very upset. And I guess I don't quite know where we can go from here. One of the things I was wondering is as employee representatives, if we could figure out solutions to this, we can also maybe just make people aware of it, because I really kind of think, kind of feeling like TCAT just said, oh, we're just not doing this, but they're not necessarily informing people easily about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you find out from the bus driver, oh, by the way, you know, we're not doing this anymore.
So you haven't gotten any formal notification from anyone?
Well, the problem is, what TCAT has been saying, I have to look up the exact date, but they basically said this is kind of a done deal, but they haven't passed it past their board yet. And we've gotten the same feedback, which is also offered on the Tioga County possible bus routes, which they would pick back up the Tioga transport routes, the two, like I said, in the morning and in the afternoon. But they won't know that until they meet in the middle of December, whether that will even be approved. So here we are, you know, like holidays are coming in, winter is coming in, and people have no idea how they're going to get to work. And we're talking, I don't know the numbers, but I'm sure TCAT or somebody else can provide them, but there's a lot of employees that are involved in that. So I just wanted to bring this to attention. Maybe this group can help us find a better solution. I also think when you talk to people, they're like, well, that's TCAT's decision. Yes, but we fund TCAT. Cornell pays money into TCAT. Mm-hmm. And we're talking a lot of Cornell employees here.
Right.
Maybe not huge amounts, but still there are plenty of people coming that way. So.
Have you talked to anybody at transportation?
I have called there. I left a message. Actually, it was one of the things that was kind of perturbed me yesterday. When I actually called, I left a message for, I think, David Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't called me back yet, but they said he was out of the office yesterday, and that's fine. But whoever answered the phone was like, oh, I don't think, that's nothing we can do. That's TCAT. I'm thinking,
There's the band share program.
There's the van pool.
Well, that's the other problem. A lot of people, they did talk to us about the van pool. The problem is the van pool does involve a bunch of people all riding at the exact same time. Right now, like I said, there's four different routes, and there's people coming in many different times.
Yeah, well, I mean, I say probably four routes is a luxury. I mean, really, that, you know.
Maybe, but my point was, I think, for Toyota Transport, it was a justifiable route
mm-hmm.
to run four through for 20-something years.
Yeah.
And ridership's increased.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still in pain. I rode a bus from Scala County for years, and they did away
with it. And they did that there, too.
So, it's the same thing. But who's on the transportation committee?
Well, I was going to say the infrastructure committee.
Yeah.
We met yesterday. We were trying to talk about ideas of things that people want to bring forward and TCAT issues were one of them. So we only met once, and I'm new to the committee, but I'll bring this to them and in here. You know,
sure.
ALM
22.
So
we did not meet
transportation. Yeah. So it's part of infrastructure now.
Do you know who from Cornell sits on TCAT board that we could?
I don't know. That's
because if they're going to do the vote,
right.
We might need to get to them.
Right. We have three members on the TCAT board. David Lee's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think they should go to the TCAT website, look at the board of directors, you'll see the Cornell people, Bobby them,
yeah.
and I'll also reach out to David. So, yeah, we technically own a third of TCAT, that's in the city and the county.
And Anne-Marie, I think it would be really helpful, too, is, you know, if you're on a bus, you know, people who ride on the other buses, see how many of them are Cornell people, so we can really try to...
I was wondering about that. Would it be helpful if I got, I don't want to say a petition, but a list of people who are riding and how many of them are associated with Cornell?
I think that would be really beneficial, because then we could say, if it's 100 people, we can say that's 100 people who are now going to want to be parking on campus, they're commuting in, they're contributing to, you know, the pollution, the what, you know, whatever.
Right.
So that would be helpful. You know, if it's six people, it's going to maybe be different, but if you're really seeing a map.
What's interesting, too, we even have people going in who work for the city of Ithaca, so that's probably only a handful. So the bus does go all the way downtown mm-hmm. and then comes back through. But I think there's another question people are asking. You know, well, I've been paying into, you know, through my payroll mm-hmm. deduction towards this. Well, is that coming out of anywhere? Am I now going to be able to do that through Toyota Transport? You know, there's all these questions
sure.
that are coming up. People have some, I think, valid concerns.
Mm-hmm.
David will help you, and I suggest you try to go over to Maple Avenue and talk to David
mm-hmm.
personally. And then I'd also suggest you go to a TCAT board meeting. I think
mm-hmm.
they usually meet like in the afternoon.
There's no
substitution for being at meetings. And
well, like I said, we did attend the meeting.
Yeah.
They came out to see us, but
right.
they basically told us it was done deal, and Toyota County didn't give them any money, so that was the end of that.
Don't believe them.
TCAT also has an advisory committee that's made up of community members. I used to sit on it. I don't anymore. But that may be another group of people to lobby because they do listen to that group.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So Toyota County wants... Are they willing to run the group?
Well, again, we won't know that until it's even approved through Toyota County. And that won't be until the middle of December.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just an awkward situation. And
yeah.
a lot of people
yeah.
are saying, you know, they've relied on this public transportation for a long time.
Sure.
Yeah.
And suddenly
yeah.
have it pulled out.
Do you know if there's other routes that are canceling too?
Well, there are some other routes. Well, the thing is they're not canceling it up to the county line.
Okay.
Just past the county line. So they'll still be running the exact same routes through. They are changing and reducing some other routes, but a lot of them are ones that are covered by other
mm-hmm.
options. You know, okay, a bus 81 or 82, I forget what it was, maybe not going up to the vet school anymore. But, you know, there's five buses every hour that go up to the vet school. So I think that I know of, and I would have to do more research, this is the only one I know where they're technically just saying there's no alternative.
Well, they did the same thing.
They did
it in
Scott County, too.
But the parking ride issue.
Yeah, the parking ride, and I don't know who to call. Is that the county? I tried calling Caroline town. I've tried calling people. No one is
calling me. They should know. Because I know there's a parking ride at the Skyler County line that TCAT picks up.
Okay. People there now.
Okay. Guys, we're 5-6 minutes over, so we've got to cut. So can I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Great. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.